This is Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of McKenzie River Broadcasting. Each week, we learn about issues affecting our community with your host, Tracy Berry.
It was founded 30 years ago in Lane County by Louise Schimmel, a woman who was committed to rehabilitating injured wildlife and enhancing education. Today, the Cascades Raptor Center has a robust rehabilitation program, and its educational mission continues to grow. It's the topic today on Community Forum. Our guests are the Raptor Center's Kit Lacey and Julie Collins. And Kit, the whole premise of the Raptor Center is a pretty basic one. Talk about that.
We believe when people make a connection with a wild animal, they look at the wild world differently, and they realize that they're sharing their world with these animals. So, yeah, we have two focuses. We have the Wildlife Hospital, where we specialize in raptors. So people find that injured raptor, they give us a call, they bring it up. We do our best to get it out in the wild. And then the public face, the public side where people can come and visit, is our ambassador program. And so we have the facility where people can come and visit. They can meet our amazing group of ambassador raptors, which are our avian coworkers, and they can get close-up looks at these amazing animals, talk to staff and volunteers, and learn even more. And we just feel like when people see them close up and then they walk away, then all of a sudden they're like, oh, there's a red tail on the highway. Oh, wow, they're out hunting in my yard. Oh, there's owls in our neighborhood. And they just start to do things a little differently. Maybe they stop using rodent poison. Maybe they're just watching out for raptors while they're driving on the road. And every little change that one person makes is a cascading effect to help us help wildlife.
And Julie, that's turned into people who become members at the Cascade Raptor Center. Talk a bit about that.
Yeah, so we have multiple ways that people are able to support us, and one of them is through memberships. And a lot of our especially local visitors become so in love with not only the birds themselves, but what we're doing up here at the center, that then they want to have a family membership, or we have some other types of memberships where they're able then to come up and visit whenever, as much as they want throughout the year. And they know that they're also supporting us so that we continue this passion that we have, which is just so important to all of us. So it's really wonderful when we're able to see that engagement, and it almost becomes like they feel that they are part of our family, that they are so proud of it, that they want to then adopt our birds. We also have an adoption program where it's pretty much like a sponsorship program where they are able to donate money, and that helps care and provide for our raptor residents who, it costs a little bit of money, if you can imagine, to feed raptors. So that's a way that they're able to support throughout the year and also build some relationships with a little bit stronger relationship and feel some proud ownership over helping and making a difference.
Well, and summer season's coming, so there's a lot of opportunity for people who aren't familiar with the Raptor Center to get out there and really get a closer look.
Yeah, summer is just a perfect time to come up and visit and see these birds, and our nature center with our trails. It's just absolutely gorgeous up here in the summertime. We just are really trying to help people embrace the outdoors too, and giving them this beautiful place that they can come visit in the summertime and check out the birds and what they do throughout the days. We are open, just so you know, 10 to 5, so Tuesday through Sunday, where they can come up and pay an admission and do a self-guided tour.
And, you know, I was thinking, Kit, after 2 years of pandemic, so many families who were staying home, so many kids who were having to do remote learning, there's something really special about having a family, and especially a child, out to see this in person.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we had to quick come up with some virtual programming options during the pandemic. And, you know, we did it, and I'm happy that we have that available for those kids that were doing remote learning, or, you know, school buses were, you know, obviously not an option to come and visit, and there was no classroom visits. So we did that, and they always felt a little bit, I guess, after 2 years of having to do everything on Zoom and everything over the computer, having that real experience, you know, having that, you know, ability to just see it right in front of you, and to hear it, and to hear all of the other sounds around, it's really impactful. And so, yeah, whether it's kids or adults or senior citizens, I think everybody really benefits, like Julie said, to get outside and just, you know, experience things again.
And you mentioned you have your ambassadors, your special raptors who are part of some of the key programs. What sort of raptors are people going to meet when they come out to visit?
Oh, sure. Yeah, well, we have nearly 40 birds that are part of our program here. So falcons, like American kestrels and peregrine falcons and others, and eagles, bald eagles, golden eagle, many different types, species of owls as well. And, hawks, of course, are another one. Red-tailed hawks are a hawk that people might see often, but then, you know, there's Swainson's hawks and ferruginous hawks that people might be less familiar with, and a northern harrier as well. Oh, an osprey. It's really amazing to see that osprey. So anyway, yeah. With those birds, they all live in large outdoor aviaries, which are their homes. I think the real special treat is that our training staff are out there working, doing training sessions and, you know, interacting with the birds and teaching those birds their important skills to be ambassadors. And people get to watch that while it's going on. So it's a really great, interesting way to meet these animals.
Okay. Also, we have a couple turkey vultures up here that people just have such a fun time visiting with.
They're fascinating animals. I mean, when you read about them, you just go, really? Huh. That's what are things people should know about turkey vultures, in fact? Give us some factoids.
Oh, yeah. So turkey vultures get a really bad rap. First thing is that they're actually not known as buzzards. A lot of people call them buzzards. It's a little bit of a misnomer, but that's okay. What we really want people to know about them is how important they are in the ecosystem. Turkey vultures are scavengers. They eat animals that have died. And one amazing thing about them is that if they eat an animal that has died of rabies or botulism or anthrax, they can eat that animal. It passes through them, they get the nutrients, and they neutralize those diseases. It does not come out of them. They literally eliminate those diseases from the environment. And so they are really, really an important key to a healthy ecosystem. So they keep humans safe. In parts of the world, vultures' populations have been decimated. In Asia, for example, over 90% of their vulture populations have declined in the last 10 or 15 years. And now they have a rabies problem. There are tons of dogs now that have rabies, and people are getting rabies too. So it's a real, real life example of how important it is that we keep a lot of these raptor populations healthy.
So you can provide not just local, but global context when people are learning about different species and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any personal favorites? You mentioned, it kind of lit up when you mentioned the osprey too, I noticed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just osprey are a really unique raptor. They have very special needs when they are in human care. And there are not very many osprey that are part of zoological collections. So we're really proud that we have Danu on our team, and she's amazing. And so that's why I light up, just because I'm so happy that she's part of our team, because it's very unusual to have an osprey on your team.
And, you know, this kind of emphasizes the point that you also are a rehabilitation center for animals that have been injured. And Julie, that does cost money to fund that. That's one reason you're always eager to have memberships, donations, people making contributions, things like that.
Correct. And just to throw it out there, because not everyone knows this, but we are a nonprofit. And as a nonprofit, the community is what is supporting us and helping us continue. So whether or not it's from admissions, whether or not it's from fundraisers, straight out donations, that's what keeps us going. And it costs a lot to feed these mouths. To give you an example, last year we were able to figure out numbers. So we were able to raise around 74 baby barn owls last year and release those baby barn owls. It was about $400 per mouth to feed those babies. If you are raising them for their full until they're from baby, like when they're hatched until they're ready to be released. So if you do the math there, that in itself, it's a lot of money plus feeding our residents. So everyone here plays an important role, and a lot of it is actually behind the scenes, us trying to make sure that we are fundraising the money so that we can continue with operations and feed all of the rehab patients and our ambassador patients.
Kit, I guess that, you know, depending on the injury to the animal, the rehabilitation program is different for every creature.
That's true. Yeah, we're really fortunate. We have a great hospital team here, and each and every patient has their own treatment plan. And so, you know, our number one goal for any patient that comes in the door is release into the wild. But we have to be realistic. We're not going to release a wild animal that doesn't have a very high likelihood of success. And these are top athlete avian predators. They have to be pretty perfect. You know, if an eye is injured, you know, that might mean that they're not going to make it. If they can't fly perfectly, they're not going to make it. And so there's really difficult decisions that need to be made in that hospital setting, you know, and we're using top-notch, you know, medical treatments here. You know, there's diagnostic tests that we're doing. There's, you know, like x-rays, and there's medications that we have to buy. So it's definitely not just that food that we're looking at. It's all kind of, imagine taking your family pet to the veterinarian. You know, we're using all of those same tools here, but obviously those wild animals, there's no one that pays the bill for them. So, you know, that's why we're asking the community, if they find what we're doing important, to get behind us and support us financially.
And when an animal is rehabilitated and able to go back in the wild, how satisfying is that?
Yeah, it's a really great time. And, you know, we love to share that with our supporters on social media. And it's really great. It's a really good feeling. And especially if it was a case that was really difficult. But, you know, each and every one of them that we get to release into the wild definitely puts a smile on our face.
You mentioned that you have your trained folks who can work on rehabilitation, but Julie, volunteers also are welcome to assist out at the center on certain things.
Yes, we have multiple volunteers that come up here. One of our most needed volunteer shifts right now is a greeter shift, which actually are our volunteers that help us run the visitor center, take admissions, and welcome any of our guests that come up. But we also have volunteers that help in our resident care, that help in the hospital. And we have had to change it a little bit with COVID. And thankfully, we were able to change it in a way where we were able to bring our volunteers back, and they play such an important role here. They, at times, they make up over 10 FTEs, which is full-time equivalent to 10 full-time employees for us certain times of the year, and in the past, even more.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking all the COVID precautions that you and everyone else had to take, and then on top of that, these poor raptors dealing with the avian influenza that came through the valley earlier.
Yeah, it's a little different. Only because, you know, COVID was a very human virus. So, you know, we could not, you know, we weren't going to pass COVID on to the birds in our care.
Right, right.
But I mean, we were prepared, fortunately, with the highly pathogenic avian influenza, because it hit the East Coast in January of this year. So we could kind of watch its progress, and we could get prepared with biosecurity, isolation. The really pretty terrifying thing about this disease is that mortality for raptors is nearly 100%. So if they catch this disease, that's really the end. There is no treatment. They're not going to survive. So obviously, making sure that our residents stay safe, our ambassadors stay safe, is really important. And then it has made the hospital and caring for these wild patients who could actually be infected coming in very complicated. So yes, a lot of personal protective equipment for our hospital staff, so that they're not transmitting it from patient to patient, isolation, 5 days isolation, once they arrive. And yeah, it's a challenge. We're looking forward to some warmer weather, which hopefully will knock back the virus in the environment, because it is still out there. And so we are still taking high level precautions right now.
Yeah, I guess out of an abundance of caution, you have some things you're asking visitors to do and not do when they come to the center.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of our visitors love to go bird watching. They love to visit wetlands and go hiking. So we are asking folks before they come to please wear a clean pair of shoes. The way that we are afraid it could possibly come into our facility is our guests are out hiking or walking on Alton Baker Park paths and step in some goose poop. And then track that goose poop, which may have the virus in it, onto our pass where our staff are walking as well. So we're just asking folks, please wear those clean shoes. And then staff is taking precautions, disinfecting their shoes at least once an hour.
If you're just joining us, good morning. You're listening to Community Forum from McKenzie River Broadcasting, and our topic is the Cascades Raptor Center, a terrific nonprofit that's been around close to 30 years. It connects people with wildlife and helps rehabilitate injured animals. Our guests are Kit Lacey, who's the bird curator, and Julie Collins, the deputy director. And Julie, you know, we were talking earlier with Kit about some of her favorite birds, but you've had some over the years too.
You work so closely with these birds and you learn their personalities. There's even this extra appreciation and love. So I'll tell you, I love Lorax. She's a great horned owl up here. And what comes across as excitement and interaction is always just brings a smile to my face. Maple has a special place in my heart right now. She's one of our newest little ambassadors, and she is a northern sawit. So just a little bitty owl with a lot of character and personality. And she's a little zoomer. She flies so fast, and she's won the hearts of so many guests. It's just been awesome watching a new bird come into the center, and the public and the community just fall in love with them and talk about them by name. It's just, I get so much joy out of that.
What I love brings me joy. I might be just kind of off doing something, and I hear young children coming up with their adult companion saying, "I can't wait to see Padawan. I wonder how he's doing today. Oh, I wonder if Taka's here today. Oh, I can't wait to see Jake." And so, you know, these kids are, you know, coming up, and they are making those connections. They're really excited to see, like Julie said, their favorite, a bird that means a lot to them. And again, just making those connections is so powerful. And I think that really has a way of helping people make connections with the larger wild world.
Yeah, I was thinking that you mentioned some of the regular hours at the center, but you also have some occasional events, raptor nights and things, and it's a chance to get a little more in depth about it, right?
Yes, it is. So we've had, it's been probably, I think it was our fourth year, but we very excited that we were able to bring them back after COVID and having to stop for a little bit, what's called Night at the Raptor Center. And those events are an evening event after hours where guests, it's a fundraiser for us. So guests purchase tickets, and then they come up and they get to have a special night at the center where they see birds out on the glove, get asked questions, also partake in some beverages and appetizers. They're all sold out, which could be a bummer in some ways, but we actually have more coming in the fall, and they are not sold out yet. So we have September 9th, September 23rd, and October 7th. So if people are interested, you can find that on Facebook or our website. And it's just, it's a super, super enjoyable evening.
We should give people the website.
CascadesRaptorCenter.org. Just make sure you add an S to Cascades. That would be the one thing gets dropped every once in a while.
CascadesRaptorCenter.org. That's CascadesRaptorCenter, all one word, .org. And Kit, I have to think when you're, leading educational tours or meeting with families, things like that, you got to get the most wonderful range of questions from adults and kids.
Oh, yes, we do. We often share the great questions that we get.
Do you have any questions you get a lot from kids?
Yeah, kids want to know, we're talking about kids. I get the poop question a lot because birds poop a lot. And it's a very functional thing. Birds need to be light for flight. Birds weigh hardly anything. It's kind of amazing. And they like to lighten their load, and they just keep things moving through. So oftentimes kids will see the birds poop. And so it's an opportunity to talk about flight. It's an opportunity to talk about how much these birds weigh. It's an opportunity to talk about a lot of things. But yeah, so definitely the poop question comes up a lot because, you know, kids. And pellets as well. So pellets are something that people think owls only produce. And it gives us an opportunity to talk about that actually all birds produce pellets. You know, a songbird will produce a pellet from beetle shells. An owl, yep, they do have pellets, but so do hawks and osprey and falcons. They all produce pellets because they're all eating the bones and the fur and the feathers of the animals that they're eating.
You know, at the start of the interview, you were kind of mentioning some of the challenges that raptors face, and you talked about some steps we might be able to take to better protect them. Can you give us some good examples of maybe just some simple basic things that we all should be thinking about?
Yeah, I think so. You know, one of the big things I think people might not realize is that if they're using rodent poison to try to control mice and rats around their property, they are also poisoning the predators that eat those animals. Because when the mouse or rat eats the poison, they are slow and they are easy targets for the raptors. And the poison is still in the system and then the raptors get poisoned. So we just ask people to try to figure out what's attracting the rats. Is it because you have a compost bin that's not, you know, well protected, or you're putting some things that are in there that are attracting rodents? Or do you have backyard chickens and you don't secure that chicken food and make it rodent proof? Or are you feeding animals outside, like you're feeding cats outdoors and you're just leaving that food out while you're feeding the rats as well? So just steps that people can take to try to minimize the rodent problem that they might be having, and then using snap traps rather than poison to get rid of the rest, because that poison just goes through the system into those raptors and then raptors die of rat poison.
I'll throw in a couple other little things.
Sure.
We see quite a bit of, especially in the summer. Fishing, please clean up after yourselves when you're done fishing. We end up with a lot of ospreys that have fishing line entangled, and you probably don't even want me to share some of the stories of what happens. And it can be, again, lethal to these birds and eagles. They can get tied up in that fishing line. And along with that, we've always recommended to keep cats indoors. That is very helpful for not just raptors, but for songbirds and any of our bird populations.
You know, it's always interesting for organizations and for nonprofits when you go from sort of the initial generation that was getting things up and running, and then you start to transition into that second phase, second generation. Yeah. You're in the process of that right now. Talk about that a little.
So we are actually... our executive director retired on March 1st, who is also our founder. So for I actually am very proud of this. For a nonprofit to have only had one executive director for over 30 years is quite impressive. But so we're also looking right now for our next executive director, and we are getting ready to grow in many ways. We are, we've purchased a property that we are going to be expanding the Raptor Center onto, but we need to have a capital campaign for that. So we're looking for a leader that has led big projects like this, that knows how to make those connections and fundraise the big dollars. That's going to be very important for our future. Also, we're looking for someone that is like-minded like us and wants to continue to do this important work, working with humans and raptors and understand why it is so important to us and to everyone else. That's very important.
And in the meantime, if people want to learn more about the Raptor Center, see your programs firsthand, just once again, give us the website and your hours so that people know going into the summer.
We are open Tuesday through Sunday, and our summer hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Our website is www.cascageraptorcenter.org. That's all one word. And we would just love for people to come up and visit and experience the beautiful birds that we have up here, and help spread the word on what we do. You know, you have guests coming in for the summer. Guess where they should come visit? Bring them up here. Let them see a little bit of Eugene in its natural state.
Well, final thoughts. Anything you want to add? Kit, anything from you?
You know, I just want to thank our community for the years of support that they've provided to our facility. You know, they are part of our success as well, helping us grow, become leaders in both wildlife rehab and training of raptors. So, you know, we couldn't have done it without a really supportive community, and we have it here in the Eugene Springfield area.
Julie, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Help us spread the word and share stories. I think sharing storytelling is the greatest way to share what an organization does and keep that passion going out into the community. If you continue to share what the Raptor Center is about and we have more visitors and people up here engaging with us, I think we'll be here for generations and generations.
Julie Collins and Kit Lacey from the Cascades Raptor Center, thanks so much for being our guests this morning on Community Forum.
Community Forum is a public affairs presentation of McKenzie River Broadcasting. If you have questions, comments, or your organization is interested in taking part in a future program, we'd like to hear from you. Send your letter to McKenzie River Broadcasting, Attention Public Affairs, 925 Country Club Road, Suite 200, Eugene, Oregon, 97401. Thanks for joining us. Tune in again next week.